Welcome to the LGBTQIA+ Fantastica Graphics Digital Symposium podcast series. We hope you enjoyed the series. If you have any comments or questions, drop us a line on our Discord server and join us for roundtable discussions of this series on November the 20th, 2021 via Zoom. For details, go to fantasticajournal.com and select the upcoming events. That's Fantastica with a K. Details are in the podcast info. The discussions are free and open to all, but registration is required for each Zoom panel. There are 5 panels in total.
This podcast is part of Panel 5, Defying Patriarchal Expectations. The Zoom discussions will take place on November 20th at 4:30 p.m. GMT time. The podcast is presented by Eloise Thomas, who's getting ready to defend their PhD dissertation on history, futurity, and the apocalypse in contemporary North American literatures. She has authored articles on the poetics and politics of memory, pandemic imaginaries, and lesbian representation, and currently teaches in the English department at Leon III University. Their podcast today is entitled Lesbians in Space with Swords: Sapphic Representation in Contemporary Graphic Narratives.
First of all, I would like to thank Fantastica and Chucky for putting together such an amazing symposium. I'm really looking forward to all the discussions we'll be having. In an interview for an article in The Atlantic, lesbian cartoonist Tilly Walden explained that she doesn't really like sci-fi, because, I quote, a lot of it is full of dudes and cold white spaces and capitalism. So in On a Sunbeam, one of her forays into science fiction, she solves the problem by depicting absolutely no dudes, by painting outer space in a wide array of bright, lush colors, and by limiting out a political and economic system that is seemingly not predicated on profit or extraction. The result is part of what can feel like a slow but undeniable paradigm shift in the last decades or so, where it seems that generally nuanced explorations of female queerness are cropping up more frequently in all kinds of narratives. I'm interested here in graphic narratives in particular, that is, comic books, animated series or films, graphic memoirs, and so on. Because I would argue that there's something inherently queer about them, in the way they combine, interrogate, and push the limits of distinct modes of representation. And that aspect can provide powerful alternative ways of representing identities that are still considered, even today, as deviating from the norm. I'll be talking about 3 speculative graphic narratives. 2 graphic novels, On a Sunbeam by Tilly Walden and Cosmonites by Hannah Templer, and 1 animated series, the rebooted She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, which was developed by Noel Stevenson. All 3 narratives take place in space, and all 3 also center lesbian or sapphic relationships. But the different political and aesthetic frameworks work to expand what we could call the lesbian imagination, in the sense that they provide us with non-stereotypical, nuanced depictions of a large spectrum of lesbian existences and lesbian identities. As a quick aside, I'm going to favor the term lesbian here more so than queer or sapphic, for instance. This isn't meant to erase other forms of queerness related to womanhood, but rather to resurrect the full subversive power of a label that remains today the site of uneasy identification for many, in spite of its long, rich, and inclusive activist history. I'm also using the pronoun she as a shorthand, because most of the characters I will be talking about use that pronoun for themselves, but it goes without saying that lesbians have always used a variety of pronouns. When talking about lesbian existences and identities here, I follow Monique Wittig's dictum that lesbians are not women. I quote, "For woman has meaning only in heterosexual systems of thought and heterosexual economic systems." I also draw upon Adrienne Rich's concepts of lesbian existence and the lesbian continuum. The former, I quote, "suggests both the fact of the historical presence of lesbians and our continuing creation of the meaning of that existence, while the latter includes a range, through each woman's life and throughout history, of woman-identified experience." As an identity label, lesbian remains tied to womanhood through its desire to affirm and center the lives and experiences of those targeted and oppressed by patriarchy. Nevertheless, the term lesbian has historically always been capacious and made room for those whose experiences could not be tidily summed up by womanhood. We find this capaciousness on different levels within the three narratives I mention. I'll be going over two aspects in particular. First, the place and role of lesbian identities in each narrative's specific political world-building. Second, the links between lesbian representation and each narrative's aesthetics. As I said, all three narratives take place in outer space, but their individual political frameworks are quite different, notably in terms of whether patriarchy and gendered oppression are structural elements or not. Cosmonaut depicts patriarchal feudalism in space, where princesses from royal houses of various planets are won in marriage through spectacular tournaments where cosmonauts in mech suits violently fight each other, and the winner gets to claim the princess for the royal who hired them. Cosmonauts is the only narrative that is driven by patriarchy, as in patriarchy is an antagonistic force that the four main characters, all identified as or implied to be queer women, decided to fight. These characters are Pan, a young woman who helped her best friend Terra, a princess, escape from their planet before the tournament, Cass, a former princess, and Bee, her wife, who compete anonymously in the tournaments, in order to claim the princesses and rescue them by setting the princesses free so they can start over. And Kate. Well, Kate wants to set the whole system ablaze, take it done once and for all, and look damn good while doing that. On the other hand, while clearly contending with imperialism and colonialism, the She-Ra reboot does not seem to feature patriarchy as part of the hegemonic system the main characters are resisting. We follow teenager Adora, a dutiful soldier of the Horde, on the planet Etheria. She discovers that she is the Princess She-Ra, the titular lesbian in space with a sword, and that she is meant to lead the resistance against the Horde. While she takes up the mantle with gusto, her best friend in the Horde, Catra, becomes her sworn enemy. But as they both face the threats the Horde unleashes on the planet, their relationship evolves again until in the final season, spoiler alert, Catra confesses her feelings to Adora, and their love is what saves Adora and the planet from certain death and ruin. There are male characters in She-Ra, but they're mostly supporting characters, with the exception of Bo, who becomes one of Adora's best friends. The two main villains, Horde Prime and his defective clone brother Hordak, are gendered as male, and the leading figures of the resistance are all coded as women, which is about as far as we get in terms of a gendered binary. Beyond that, it could be argued that all characters, at least on the side of a resistance, are some shade of queer, and there are examples of lesbian and gay relationships before Dora and Catra's own relationship is made official. Honor Sembeam portrays a world with seemingly only women and a few non-binary characters, something all readers and reviewers have picked up on. Absolutely no explanation is provided for the glaring absence of men. We do not know if they are dead, or living just off the page, or if they simply never existed at all. As Zora Gilbert said, what Walden does is, I quote, "the revolutionary act of rejecting a paradigm by simply refusing to acknowledge its existence." The graphic novel follows Mia, who after high school takes up a job on a construction crew that goes from planet to planet in order to repair old buildings. Mia has an ulterior motive, though. She means to find Grace, the girl she fell in love with a few years before and whom she lost contact with. Aboard the ship, the entire crew is explicitly queer. Depending on each narrative's political structures, lesbian relationships may be a form of dissidence, as in Cosmonauts, or the norm, as in On a Sunbeam. In She-Ra, the absence of any overt patriarchal structures makes lesbian relationships perhaps not the norm, but at least something of a non-event. In all cases, the lesbian and queer main characters are always positioned as resisting some form of hegemony. Adora leads a resistance. Mia wants to track down Grace because the latter's abrupt departure from their boarding school is implicitly tied to the political structure that links the planets together, and the ragtag band of space gays in Cosmonites make their rejection of the patriarchal order very clear. The lesbian characters also help subvert categories of gender and sexuality, and thus contribute to a more expansive vision of what womanhood or lesbianism entail. This is underscored by the visual representative choices of each graphic narrative, from the character's gender presentation, physical appearance, clothes, etc., to color palette and drawing style. In Cosmonites, the first volume already starts showcasing a broad spectrum of gender presentation for all women in the main cast. Cass, Bee, and Pan all come across as butches but in different ways. Cass, who has been called a muscular hunk, is routinely gendered as male in the tournament spaces, and thus embodies the genderqueerness that is arguably inherent in lesbian identities. Kate is the more femme-leaning member of the group, and she is a trans woman, something that is never explicitly stated as such, but confirmed by her tattoo, Trans Teen Beauty Queen. Volume 2 brings slightly more diversity regarding body type. The princess that the group has rescued at the end of Volume 1 is not slim or athletic like the other main characters, and she is not coded as white, making her arguably the second main character of color after Bee, who is black. The color palette is bold and changes to denote flashbacks, tournament fights, etc. This is most spectacular in the full-page illustrations that depict settings in outer space. The darkness and the coldness we may associate with outer space are nowhere to be found. Instead, we get full color illustrations of night skies and planets, futuristic cities and spaceships that trigger a sense of awe and lushness that is not what we may expect from high-tech-oriented sci-fi narratives. The colors in On a Sunbeam are built out of a similar palette, even though the execution is a tad different, with the lines feeling looser and less precise, yet still intensely evocative. It first juxtaposes heavy blacks in a monochromatic palette restricted to each individual setting. Blue for Mia's boarding school, red for the site of her first restoration job, and so on. But as the action and the memories unfold, the palettes start to intermingle, exploding into bright expanses of color that refute the idea that outer space and spaceships are cold and colorless, and thus contributing to moving away from the common sci-fi tropes defined by straight male authors. In terms of diversity, the world that Walden builds helps expand the conception we have of womanhood, since it is the implicit norm. Characters are not all white, for instance, Grace and Char are black, and they display a wide array of gender presentations. Mia's act of cutting her hair and presenting as more butch as the story unfolds provides a visual cue regarding her capacity to become more fully herself, to step into her role as the new crew captain after Char. But it also has limits. In addition to the practically non-existent diversity regarding body type, the only non-binary character, Elliot, a member of Mia's crew, is non-verbal for the vast majority of the narrative, and they are misgendered by authority figures in a few instances. Even though the crew systematically defends Elliot, this shows that an all-woman world might not necessarily be accepting of non-binary identities. This also crops up in She-Ra, where the only overtly non-binary character is a two-timing shapeshifter. The implicit conflation of their gendered non-conformity with overt alienness has drawn criticism from trans and non-binary communities. Additionally, all female main characters are presumed to be cisgender. It was mentioned that one of the princesses, Perfuma, could be read as a trans woman, but that is never really confirmed. Nonetheless, the diversity of gender presentation and body type reaffirms the show's intention to showcase the many different forms that womanhood can take when it comes to expressing gender and sexuality. Furthermore, since this is a reboot, the clothes worn by the female characters, especially Adora, were redesigned to fit the characters' ages, as older teenagers or young adults, and push back against the persistent sexualization of younger female characters. Adora no longer exists as the fantasy of a female warrior that counteracts her strength with femininity. She and the other princesses exist on their own terms. She-Ra also displays a vibrant color palette when it comes to landscapes and places in Etheria, especially in contrast with the bleak barrenness of any part of the planet that has been drained excavated and exhausted by the Horde, as well as the bleak, stifling homogeneity of Horde Prime's spaceship. I do believe this use of colors, in Shira in particular, but also in the other narratives, reflects to some extent a queer sensibility through an implicit commentary on the death-driven and death-bound aspect of the desire for purity, which is associated with heteronormativity. Three salient points emerge from this admittedly brief overview. First, the use of a graphic narrative's hybrid form is a powerful one, when staging and representing marginalized identities, because this form allows certain plot points or world-building aspects to stand unexplained, such as the ability to casually breathe in outer space. This allows us to see and imagine worlds where queerness, and especially female queerness, does not bear the burden of justifying its existence. Second, it is literally impossible to represent every single aspect of queer womanhood in any one show without it veering into tokenism and superficial representation. However, recent narratives, especially ones targeted at younger audiences, are undeniably moving toward fuller and more complex modes of representation. That is fairly obviously tied to the fact that the ones writing and directing these narratives are lesbians, queer women, and non-binary creators. Walden and Templar are overtly lesbians, Stevenson is non-binary. This is groundbreaking in the sense that it allows for queer kids, teenagers, and young adults to see themselves on screen and to imagine worlds where their existence is not constantly threatened. Third, and finally, as characters who overtly defy the double weight of the twinned institutions of patriarchy and heteronormativity, lesbians emerge as powerful vectors of resistance against hegemony, offering complex, in-depth representations of lesbian lives and identities is part and parcel of a broader feminist and queer project of utopia making, one that is becoming increasingly relevant in the 21st century. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed the discussion of Cosmonites, Anna Sundin, and She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. This panel continues with a podcast by C. Palmer Patel and a discussion of recent Wonder Woman retcons.
If you enjoyed the series or have questions, join the conversation with us on Discord on November the 20th, 2021 for our Zoom webinars. For details, go to fantasticajournal.com and select the upcoming events. The discussions are free and open to all, but registration is required for each of the five Zoom panels. We look forward to seeing you there.